This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Dr. Ronwen van Eerden, who is a medical oncologist in Rosebank, Johannesburg. She's also an honorary consultant in medical oncology at the Chris Hani Academic Hospital. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. van Eerden, your medical journey spans some of South Africa's most renowned institutions, from Pretoria to Baragwanath to Charlotte Makeke. Please tell us what initially attracted you to medicine and then to specialize in oncology in particular.
I always laugh and I say that, you know, since I could choose a career as a child, I always said I wanted to be a doctor. And I was quite emphatic about that and never changed my mind ever. So I was very, very fortunate in the fact that I could choose to have a dream and then actually follow that dream and, you know, become what I'd always dreamed to be. So that's quite, I think, interesting for me because I didn't ever see myself doing anything else ever in life. Oncology specifically, I always laugh because I always say it's not something you choose. I feel like it chooses you. Before we do oncology, we also specialize in internal medicine and then we rotate through different specialties. And medical oncology was always something that no one wanted to do because it sounds very depressing. It sounds very overwhelming, and when I did land up in that rotation, and the irony is I didn't really want to do it. And when I spent my 4 months there, it was one of the best 4 months I'd spent. I found it really interesting. I also found that the journey with the patient was very different because it was a longer journey. It was a journey where you could engage with the patient, get to know them as a person. And yeah, so it was really just interesting for me from that point of view because it was something I didn't expect it to be and ended up loving it. And obviously oncology is amazing because it's always innovative, always changing. There's always new things. So it's actually quite an exciting field to be in.
First, I think it's fantastic that you had this dream as a kid and were able to pursue it. And then the idea of the rotations, and we've had a number of doctors on the show before, and I think that's also one of the great things about medicine is that you are exposed to so many different fields and then something talks to you and you know that that's your aha moment.
Exactly. So I think even when you're still training, doing your internship, doing your community service, I could even say at that point, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to be. There was always a toss up between being a physician and then being a surgeon because, you know, the surgeon's always, it sounds a lot more fancy and a lot more accomplished. But basically through your time, you learn what you're good at. You learn what you enjoy, what your niches are. And then like I said, it finds your path. And I think that's a very important thing is that your path in life, I think, gets guided by your experiences and gets guided by where life leads you. And you kind of have to trust it and go with it and then land up where you're meant to be.
Thinking about the experience piece, being in the public healthcare system is quite a contrast to private. How did your early experiences at the likes of Chris Hani Baragwanath and then in Potchefstroom influence your approach to patient care today?
Yeah, look, I always also wanted to do my internship at Baragwanath because obviously it's the biggest hospital in South Africa. And also I'd heard a lot of good things about the training that you get, the exposure. Basically, when you get to Barra, you get to do everything and you see everything. So I feel when you leave there like with no fear, you leave there with a feeling of like I can face anything and I can do anything. Obviously it had its challenges because of the restraints that we had. We didn't have access to everything. I was very fortunate in that time I had a lot of good consultants, a lot of good mentors that were willing to teach and that really did teach us a lot of things. Potchefstroom was a bit different. That was your community service year. So you kind of like go out into the wild hoping that you have enough training and experience to be able to face all these things. And Potchefstroom is a bit different because obviously there's less supervision, there's less guidance, there's less senior consultants. Consultants, those kind of things. So you kind of left to your own devices. I always say that that year of my life is a little bit of sometimes I want to look back and forget about it because it obviously, you look back and you think about the choices you made and the patients you saw like on your own. But however, it was a point in my life where I realized that I did want to do internal medicine as a specialty, and that actually consolidated for me what I wanted to do with my future.
Thanks for sharing those aspects of your journey. The next thing I wanted to ask you, because we're a gender-based radio show, is if you've experienced any personal or structural barriers in your medical journey, and if so, how you overcame them.
So I think that in medicine there's always a hierarchy that follows with each speciality and each thing you do. I think what's always difficult is that when you start as a doctor, I always say you're like at the bottom of the food chain. So you kind of have to work your way up, prove yourself, work really hard. I think in terms of barriers specifically as a woman for other female specialists or doctors in medicine is that it's always a little bit harder, I feel, to be recognized as someone with knowledge and that someone who's got, gravitas or that can like change things or can or have capabilities to be able to do things. So obviously like different specialities have the different nuances. So I think certain things are harder than others, but I think the important thing was just that there are always people that will support you and help you and teach you. Yeah, so I think the interesting thing probably as a woman and probably also as a woman of color, you always feel a little bit more like you have to try a little bit harder to prove yourself, or you have to be a little bit more assertive, or you have to be a little bit bold. And interestingly, like reflections of my personality or how I was at different points in my career, like I go back and some people actually tell me as a registrar when I was specializing in medicine, that I could be quite aggressive or that I could be quite like determined or bold. And I look at myself and yes, I do think I am bold in certain areas, but I think maybe it came across in a way of like where it's defensive or where it is trying to prove yourself too much almost. But I think it was because you felt the need to be able to for people to see you and take you seriously and actually like realize that the skills that you have are really there and you are capable. So, I think it does go along the lines of that you feel like you have more to prove. So you have more to, kind of, how can I put it? I think it's more like a way of where you feel small in a big space with a lot of big personalities, and a lot of strong, accomplished people. So you really, really feel little at times. So you really feel that you've got to really project what you know and what your skills are so that you can be seen and be heard and, be taken seriously. So I think those are some of the challenges that we have as women or that we have as younger doctors when we start out, especially.
And then you shifted over to private practice in 2026. What were some of the differences that you noticed between working in the public sector and private oncology practice, particularly thinking about patient access and treatment pathways?
Yeah, so that was 2016. So, So that's when I finished my time in medical oncology at Charlotte Maxeke Hospital. And then at that point, how it works in the public sector is that you kind of get allocated a post and you've got a certain amount of time in that post. And I think what's sad is that the structure of medicine, or that the government doesn't really allow for more posts or allow for people to want to stay behind in government, that want to be there because they are limited spaces, limited amounts, and you've kind of got to make way for other people that are coming in and specializing. So it was like really bittersweet because I actually wanted to stay in the public sector. I think all of our hearts, when you've spent so many years working in public, is that they are there because you feel like you make the biggest difference there, because you're helping people that are poorer, you're helping patients that are more underprivileged, that don't really have access, and you feel like almost that that's where you'll make the biggest impact. But going into private practice, I think I went in it with a little bit idealistically, where I felt that, oh, okay, so all these amazing drugs that I had learned about in oncology, all these fancy things, because obviously the things that we have available in private practice is very limited. It's very basic. We don't have access to precision medicine, to targeted therapies, to fancy things. And I thought, I'm going to go into private and I'm going to practice this amazing medicine where I could kind of like just treat everything and give everything. And it was quite a shock, and it was quite a challenge, because I got there and I realized that private has its own challenges as well. Like, basically, that although people did have medical aids, or they did have funders to help support their treatment journey, is that still, even in that setting, you didn't have access to all the things that you thought you would. So, where I thought I was going to be giving fancy oncology, I still ended up giving a lot of basic things, like still having to revert to using chemotherapy, because unfortunately, depending on the medical aid and how much the fund is willing to pay, they still limit you quite a lot in what you can give and what you can prescribe to patients. And then I also think the challenges there was that a patient in private practice versus one in public is a very different patient. You come from a place where in public, the patients wake up early in the morning, they stand in queues for hours, they're so grateful to see you, and they're so thankful for, that's what I always felt, for the help that they got and just any help that they could get. And whereas private, you felt a little bit more like people were, because they were having private funding and they were paying you for a service, that they felt some sort of entitlement or ownership of that. So it was very different or difficult to adjust to how I interacted with people and how I engaged with people. And I must say, the first couple of years in private practice was difficult because you didn't really know how to position yourself then in an assertive way where people actually listen to you. And as the years goes on, it gets harder and harder, because now people have more access to information. There's so much stuff on the internet out there.
Yes,
So
Dr.
it
Google.
wasn't. Yeah, so actually, as you, even though you become more in a comp more accomplished as an oncologist, and you feel like you know everything, you know what to do, your patient's challenging you more because they've read things or they've researched it themselves. So it gets progressively more and more difficult. And I think like it's quite vast and it's quite different. And I think what you have to almost tell yourself is, even though you're working in private practice, it doesn't mean you're not helping people in the way that you'd help them in public, just because they are more underprivileged or have less access to things, that people with cancer still need support and they still need love and they still need someone to explain things and care for them. It's just a little bit of a different patient dynamic and a little bit of a different patient type. And I think that's also quite specific to South Africa, whereas private healthcare gives patients like very quick, almost immediate access, and the patients do get quite difficult and it gets quite challenging. So you've got to navigate all those personalities as well, and all those expectations from you as a doctor. But yeah, it was an interesting transition. And I think as the years go on, you just like medicine, like continually evolves and changes, and the patients change, and you have to kind of learn and adapt, and also change as a doctor, and changes how you approach to caring and managing patients as well. So yeah, it's a continuous learning journey. I did try to go back. So obviously with the honorary post at Baragwanath is to go and help at the clinic in for a day a week, and I found it actually, and I hadn't worked then in private for public for the past 6 years, and I found it quite a challenge, because now almost in private practice you're a little bit spoilt, where you can get scans when you want, you can get more access to medication, and I felt like I went back to almost like this jungle in a way, where you know things were just chaotic and difficult, and I couldn't practice the medicine I know and in the way I do it. So yeah, I did. I think public and private are they're worlds apart, and they challenge you in different ways. And you've kind of got to learn and adapt and try and just find a balance and a specific place with each patient you see, and to find their needs and how to care for them in the position and in the situation you are in.
Thanks for sharing that perspective. And now I'm going to tap into the aspect on patients, because that really is it seems to be an important dynamic in your ethos and your philosophy. What does patient-centered care mean to you, and how do you help people navigate an often overwhelming cancer journey?
Yeah, so I think... So patient-centeredness goes around having an holistic approach to a person. I think what happens is, yes, as an oncologist, they come to you, they have cancer. The expectation is that you either cure their cancer or help them with their symptoms or help them live longer. But, you know, my approach is to try and integrate the patient into their care, so that they help with a lot of information, to give them good information and not information that they access from the internet and other places that might confound the idea about their cancer, because what they're looking at and what they're researching might not be applicable to them. And then to give them information, tell them as much as they can about their cancer, so that they can kind of make a shared decision with you in terms of what their care is going to look like and what their care is going to be. I think also what we try to do is to try and make the journey as easy as possible for patients, by obviously trying to take some of the load and the stress off the journey by helping them to navigate through the treatment pathway, by helping them by getting maybe the authorizations done, the scans booked, kind of guiding them in their journey, but also reminding the patient that it's also their responsibility to, you know, take care of themselves, to also be proactive in, you know, being part of their care and their journey and their medications and stuff like that. I think what's difficult with the cancer patient, I try to reframe the disease, is that in terms of cancer, yes, it's a horrible thing. And I think the stigma to it and the association to it is that, you know, it is, it sounds like death, it sounds scary, but I try to say that there's a lot of other chronic illnesses, and not to say that cancer is minuscule or demean it in any way, but there are other chronic illnesses that can also result in long-term care, like diabetes, like heart disease, that can be also quite debilitating. And then to kind of look at the cancer as in, yes, I have cancer, but I can live with this and I can manage it with different treatments and sequencing of different treatments. And to kind of say that there's kind of an acceptance to, yes, you have cancer. It is what it is. We can't change the diagnosis, but we can choose how we approach it, and we can choose how we fight it, and you know, how we accept our treatments and kind of like journey through it together. I think the hard thing about a cancer patient is that they're incredibly anxious. You know, they've got very high levels of anxiety, and sometimes that comes across as nerves, sometimes it comes across as aggression, sometimes it comes across as just being completely overwhelmed and all over the place. So I think, you know, the important thing is just to find a connection with each patient and kind of establish what their goals of therapy is, what they want for themselves, how they envision their journey to be, what they want out of it. Do they want quality? Do they want quantity? Do they have goals? So there's like a lot of nuances to it. And I think that each patient, to be patient-centered, you have to actually get to know that patient and try and connect with them so that you're on the same page as them. And it's not always easy because, people are different and people have different ideas of, what they want you to be as a doctor or what they expect from their therapy. So I always joke and I say a lot of my work is not really so much just figuring out a treatment plan for patients in terms of the actual disease. I actually like at that point, it's easy. It's actually just navigating around these different personalities and the anxiety and the anger towards the disease and navigating the family members that are then also very anxious with them and want to interfere and do everything for them. So it's like this constant just like pathway of just finding all these like spots where we can all just, manage everything together.
It's really multifaceted. It's not just about the disease. And hearing you, there's this change of mindset, there's this change of approach, and that everything is tailored to the individual. So I think
Correct.
that's also one of the dynamics of your challenges is working with these different personalities and working to together.
I think it's also important, sorry, just to add, is that, a cancer journey is not one that is driven alone by an oncologist. It's really a multidisciplinary care. And by multidisciplinary, we usually mean that we need other specialists with interest in the disease area you're looking at. So your other specialists like your surgeons, your radiation oncologists, your physicians, a pulmonologist, all of those things that help to manage the patient, but also it's multidisciplinary from the fact that we need a lot of ancillary supportive care, like from psychiatrists, psychologists, dietitian, nutrition, physiotherapy, exercise. So there's so many things that you have to incorporate into the care of that patient. So I always say to patients, it's always to remember that the care that they get for their cancer is not actually just me, it's actually multidisciplinary, and they need a lot of different people to be involved in their care for them to have the best outcome and the best journey possible.
It's almost like a lifestyle in a way. We're in Breast Cancer Awareness Month with October, and I wanted to ask you about some of the prevalence of breast cancer in terms of how it's possibly changed over the years and what have been some of the factors that have contributed to those changes?
Yeah, so I think obviously awareness and people being proactive about their breasts and proactive about their health and kind of being aware that they need to self-examine, that they need to screen for breast cancers. I think also the disparity in breast cancer care from private and public health is also really huge. Whereas in public, because of lack of access, maybe lack of education, that the patients in public sector still present with very, very advanced disease. So they still present with huge breast tumors, huge masses that are very advanced already, or even quite late, where they present with metastatic disease or disease that's spread already. In private, I find it's a little bit different. The spectrum of patients, where I see a lot of more breast cancers a lot earlier. And that's because patients have medical aids and more access to screening mammography and those kind of things where they actually have funders that will pay for those tests. Or also we have a patient that's maybe a bit more aware, so if they feel a lump, they don't kind of dismiss it, or they see a change in their breast, that they actively go and get someone to see them and to get a mammogram early and stuff like that. So I think public and private still like a huge, huge difference in terms of the stage or initial presentation of a patient. Whereas, private, very early public, we still see things quite late and quite advanced. So I think the whole thing about Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October is to kind of promote that kind of thinking of that you must be not ignore your breasts. They are there. You must screen. And I think what the important thing I wanted to say about it is that the breast cancer patient that we see in practice every day is not maybe the perception of what the general population think it is, that it's actually a lot of young patients and a lot of young women. So, I mean, I have patients in their late 20s, so those are my youngest patients. And I see a lot of patients in their ages between 35 and, say, 45. So, I mean, that's a very young population of patients. And also in those patients, we generally see that the cancers maybe tend to be a bit more aggressive, or they need a bit, they need more in terms of the different modalities of therapy they need. And then also, obviously, for our older patients is that, you know, they still need to screen. I always say we mustn't be ageist. And yeah, so to continue on with breast checks and breast care and stuff like that as well.
Share a couple of positive patient stories with us who have overcome or are in remission in their breast cancer journey.
You know, I get asked constantly, like, why do you do this job? It's so sad. Like, it's oncology, it's cancer. Like, why on earth would you do this? And I say to people, actually, like, and especially with breast cancer patients, is we have more good stories than bad stories. And I don't have just one or two stories. I spend a lot of my afternoons doing my long-term follow-ups and my survivorship patients and stuff. And I would say that most patients actually do go into remission, and they do get cured of their breast cancers, and they do very, very well. So it's actually very few and far between where everything is very dismal or sad. And I think it's actually quite a positive journey. So I think that for patients, that when they get into a good system, when they screen, when we detect early, when we've got a good multidisciplinary team involved, that outcomes are actually really, really good. So I think that that people have to look at it in a way as it's a disease. It's very manageable. If we get it early, it's curable as well. And also, you know, the archaic way of thinking that what we do is kind of just chop off breasts and do things, like, things are so tailored. They're so different. They're so niched. Really, patients also get good personal outcomes where they get good aesthetic results, they feel confident afterwards. And also, just in terms of breast cancer therapies, those have evolved so much that we have so many new things, so many different things. So we're also seeing that our outcomes are a lot better because also of the access to newer drugs and therapies that we have.
Well, that is very reassuring.
Yes.
Earlier in the conversation, you spoke about the advancements and the innovation and the development that happens in the field. And for me, when I look at some aspects of your biography, you're very involved in your discipline. You serve in the executive committee of BIGOSA, the Breast Interest Group of South Africa, and you're also on the executive committee of the Cardio-Oncology Society of Southern Africa. And previously, you were on the executive committee of the South African Society of Medical Oncology. Additionally, you're an associate editor for the Journal of Thoracic Oncology. This level of commitment shows that you're deeply engaged in shaping the direction of your field. How has being actively involved at this level broadened your perspectives on oncology? And also, in what ways do you see your work helping shape the future of cancer care in South Africa?
Yeah, so I always laugh because, you know, the extra things we do, all these extra commitments and stuff, they're important, but I always laugh because we all, like, a little bit overwhelmed and trying to find the time to, like, fit all these things in. And, but they are so important because belonging to these societies helps us to coordinate conferences, coordinate events and awareness about breast cancer. And also, the important part is continuing medical education for other specialists, where we can also help to teach more more, to help people to engage more. What I find for myself personally is that being involved in these societies, and we do a lot of talks, we do a lot of education, we do drug launches, we do educational meetings, is that it also helps me from a personal point of view as an oncologist, that because I have to be on the top of my field or on the top of my game and be able to teach these things at different levels or engage with different professionals or upcoming or young oncologists, is that it forces me actually to constantly be on par with what's happening in oncology, what's new, what's precision, what's different. So it builds me a lot as a character, in a character wise for myself, because I feel like the knowledge that I gain from it as well is also quite extensive. Because if you're constantly keeping active in your field, participating in meetings, participating in lectures, participating in education, your knowledge and your horizons also continually broaden, and you get exposed to more things and you become more accomplished and you learn more. I think these societies are important because obviously, they help to shape just awareness and education, and make sure that other specialists are also keeping up to date and keeping current in their field. The Cardio Oncology Society is actually quite a recent or a new one, where it's actually quite a new field in oncology as well, where I think there wasn't a lot of awareness before about what the certain drugs and treatments that we give or administer to patients and what impact they actually have on their cardiovascular health as well. I think we also forget sometimes now that because oncology's progressed so much, we have patients that live for long periods of time and many, many years, and also that all those treatments that we do give also have an impact on their cardiovascular health. So we're also trying to create awareness in terms of that, not only for our own specialty, but also for cardiologists and also for the patients, so that they know that, you know, their disease is a holistic thing and we need to look after everything. So it sounds, I always laugh, I said sometimes the stuff sounds impressive, but it's also, it's quite exhausting, because we always say, you know, we don't know, like in terms of having a private practice and seeing lots of patients and then having all these extracurricular conferences and meetings and things that we do, it's quite a thing to juggle. But yeah, it's important because it helps you to help other people and to give back, mm-hmm. and to teach, also to further your professional development as well.
Well, you're moving with the cutting edge. So as a passionate advocate for the field of oncology, what message would you like to share with younger women who are perhaps considering a career in medicine or oncology?
I always laugh and I say you must always do this work for yourself. You must always do it because you love it and because it's something that you're passionate about. And it's you have to be in it almost in a very altruistic way, where it's you're there because you want to help people and you want to, you know, you can't be in it for a title or for a, you know, for a level of like just accomplishment, or you have to really love this job because I think oncology is really challenging. And I think that the type of patient you see, you know, it really can affect you emotionally. It affects your, you know, just, yeah, your mood, how you feel about stuff. So what I always say is that when you pursue a career in medicine, you must really do it for the right reasons, and you do it because you feel it's your calling or that you want to do it. And then I think just in terms of being a woman in medicine, is that never to feel small or never to feel diminished, and to always feel that you can accomplish anything that you set your mind to. You know, my dad always used to say to me, the sky is the limit. So you have to almost believe that when you get there, whatever goal or whatever role you see yourself in, that it's something that you can accomplish and it's something that you can do. So just to persevere. There's a lot of times that you feel despondent. There's a lot of times that you feel overwhelmed in medicine and overwhelmed in your career, but kind of just to keep going. And the whole thing is hard work, actually. I always laugh. Like I actually got asked by someone the other day who was like a young oncologist, and they were like, oh, you know, how did you get here? Or how did you get to do all these things? Or how did you get to these talks? And I was like, oh my gosh, I just worked really, really hard. So I would just say that it's relentless, and you must just have passion for it, and you must just keep working hard, and you just have to believe that, you know, all the things that you're doing, although at the time when you're doing them, they seem menial, or they seem, you know, hard, or they seem laborsome or tiresome, is that you have to believe that every step that you're taking and everything that you're doing and every experience you're getting is a step and a milestone to your next thing and to where you'll eventually land up and be one day. So yeah, just passion, hard work. And one of my mentors also always used to say to me, like, Ronan, you must just have a big confidence in yourself and just, you know, go there and believe that you can do everything and that you can do it really well.
I think that's a very powerful message that spans not just oncology and medicine, but almost whatever path someone wants to pursue is going in there with passion.
Good.
And in closing today's conversation, please can you share a few words of wisdom or inspiration you'd like to pass on to girls and women listening to us on the continent?
Yeah, so that's always like it's such a loaded question, you know, like what do you say to someone to inspire them, or what do you say to someone to want them to work hard and do their best in life. I think that at the moment, I think just not only in medicine, but in every facet of life, the world is just a very hard place. I think that there's a lot of pressure on us as women. You know, I always laugh and I look back and I say, sometimes you almost want to go back to the 50s where you kind of just put on a pretty dress and cooked dinner and had a family and you had no other responsibilities and cares in the world. I think there's such a huge expectation from us as women these days. There's so much to prove. You've got so much to do in terms of being this superpower in everything you do. So you have to look a certain way. You have to like manage being healthy, exercising, doing studying, doing research, doing other things like furthering your career, and then in your work every day, be absolutely meticulous, be like the best doctor you can be, the best person you can be. You need to keep on top of all the tasks that you have. You have to kind of be amazing. You have to try and look presentable every day. Like there's so much demand on us as women, and then, you know, to be the best mom, to be the best friend, to be the best daughter. There's so many demands on us in terms of all the different facets of our life where we need to be almost like accomplished and perfect and do so well. What I want to say is that you know, to be inspiring is to remember to stop so much thinking about all the things that you didn't do or you didn't achieve yet or you still have to do or that's still looming and still coming. And it's kind of just to look at yourself and say, what did I do today? Where am I as a person? And give yourself some credit for all the things you've done already and kind of say, well done, you know, I chose medicine and I got in it and it's fine. And even if today I do a total mess of the day and all my patients don't do well or it's complicated or it's like overwhelming, you know, to show up, to be there, to give your best and to put in the most effort you can and then go home and be proud of anything you accomplished that day. I think that's enough. I think that we are so hard on ourselves and we expect so much of ourselves and there's so much of this expectation to be the best at everything and to shine and to be brilliant. But I just want to say to women out there, like our lives are hard every day. Just be proud of waking up, getting dressed, going to work and being the best version of yourself and just accomplishing that. And the other things will come as you go and you believe in yourself and give yourself credit for everything that you've achieved so far and that you're just getting through and doing already. You know, I think a lot of people want to be inspiring and they want to be like, go work hard, go out there. Like those things will come if every day you just give yourself a little bit of love and a little bit of credit and just be like, you know what, I really try my best and, you know, that's important too.
Thank you. Those insights are so, so true. Thank you
Yeah.
so much for sharing your story with us and being so real and honest about everything in life. I think it's a fantastic learning that we can all take something away from.
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I hope that, whoever listens to that, this does find inspiration from it. I always say I look back at my life, and if you asked me 15 years ago if this is where I would be today, I'd be like, no way. Like, oncology wasn't even a thought in my head. And I think each day, like as I grow and as I learn and as we become more accomplished in our fields, you just realize it's just all about like just having love and passion for your work and what you do every day. So yeah, and just all the best to you as well, and good luck with this part where you're doing your PhD and stuff like that. I really know it can be like a really tough part, but when it's done, you're going to look back and you're going to be like, ah, it was amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Dr. Ronwin van Eerden, who is a medical oncologist in Rosebank, Johannesburg, and also an honorary consultant in medical oncology at the Chris Hani Academic Hospital.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.